From the community room at UMSL's Grand Center and the home of St. Louis Public Radio, welcome to St. Louis on the Air. This is a special broadcast, a town hall forum featuring the Democratic candidates for mayor of St. Louis in the March 5th primary election. They are incumbent Mayor Francis Slay, Louis Reed, president of the St. Louis Board of Aldermen, and former city alderman Jimmy Matthews. We'll ask that to be the last demonstration of support, if you will, until after the broadcast. The winner will face Green Party candidate James McNeely in the April general election. No Republican is running. History suggests the winner of the Democratic primary will prevail in the general. I'm Don Marsh. I welcome you listening at home and you and our Grand Center audience. This forum is being broadcast without interruption and is being recorded by the Nine Network for broadcast later on KETC. This is a town hall format, not a debate. Candidates will begin with a 2.5-minute opening statement. They will be taking questions from me and from our studio audience. We have asked audience members to refrain from any demonstration of support for individual candidates during this broadcast. The order for those opening statements has been randomly established with candidate approval. We begin with Louis Reed. Please abide by the time cues, Mr. Reed and other candidates.
Well, thanks. Before I begin, Don, let me thank you and the entire staff of KWMU for putting on this great forum, you know, and each and every one of you for showing up today, and also all the listeners for joining in on this discourse, because I think it's an important issue. I think it's important that everybody is informed about the issues that we're faced and that we're all faced with in front of the city today. I'm running for mayor because I'm a father of four. And when I've met with people from end to end of the city, no matter where I meet them, north, south, east, and west, and I meet with parents and I meet with, you know, relatives and I meet with kids and things, I know the hurt that the families are under in the city of St. Louis, and I know we can do better. If you take a look at our crime rate, it's out of control. If you take a look at our job growth, relatively flatline. We continue to lose corporations. Our airport is a shell of what it used to be. And we can do better as a city. We can be a more unified city. And I'm willing to work, and I'm looking forward to working with each and every person, no matter where they are in the city, whether you live north, whether you live south, whether you live in the central corridor, I don't care. We are going to rebuild our city. We're going to rebuild our city as one. And we're going to be a stronger, safer, more unified St. Louis at the end. So thank you.
And our next speaker will be Jimmy Matthews.
Thank you, Don. I'm happy to be here, and God bless each of you here. I was an alderman of the 27th Ward and a committee man. I'm a real estate broker. I've been doing development and also personal business. I grew up in business. My father and my family owned seven business at once. And I work for them, I want to work for you. Not just the rich and famous, but the poor and struggling. And we need to serve that interest, which has been neglected for many of years, and the problem is growing. Crime is part of that issue. When people don't have opportunities or skills that they could utilize in our community, and yet having the skills, being ignored. I met people who have PhDs or higher, not higher than that, but have college degrees, no job. I try to encourage them, start your own business. And I can't understand if you got a PhD, you can't start your own business. Or whatever degree you have, you should try and hire yourself and work for yourself when systems are not available to you. I'm retired from the school teachers board, city schools. I was raised in learning and taught in city schools. City schools at the time I went through, the city schools was good enough for me, and I'm here because of public schools. And many people don't have the money to go to private schools, and our schools are being drained by charter schools taking the resources. And you never improve the city schools unless you keep the finances there and let them support the schools that are currently existing. I want to rebuild our neighborhoods. I don't want to rebuild downtown. I don't want to build Ballpark Village. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to build a stadium. I want to build a neighborhood. And I'm asking you, the people in the city, to support me. Homeless people are suffering. We tried to get some homeless to go to the library. The library put them out, fighting that issue currently. Homeless people can't use the library. And when I went there, they got computer training and all that and all this stuff. But yet the homeless who need the services can't attend the Central Library. I think we spent about $70 million, I think. And poor people can't use the library, or at least they're being ran off. I want to help the elderly and the youth and develop business. Our key to solving our problem of crime is to hire some young people, and you have to create business that does that.
Jimmy Matthews, your time is up. Thank you very much. Mayor Slay, you're next.
Good morning and welcome. It's great to be with you this morning, and thank you for being here. You know, I'm going to start my introduction by reminding you where we started 12 years ago. Remember, we have one of the most complex city governments in America. Two other citywide elected officials have equal say as I on expenditures, contracts, as well as real estate matters. We don't have local control of the police department until July 1st, so this is a job where moral authority and persuasion are the mayor's strongest powers. Fortunately, this job plays to my strengths. I build strong teams. I also work well with partners. I work hard every day. I save favors against the day I need them for the benefit of the people of St. Louis. My word is good. My temperament is even, and I pay attention to details. Having served as mayor for three consecutive terms has given me the credibility to accomplish things that other mayors have been unable to do but wanted to do, like systemic reform of public education, like local control of the police department. We also now have inclusion of more minorities and women and city residents on public projects and publicly supported projects, and real financial predictability in city government by reform of the firefighters' retirement system. We have new partnerships with St. Louis County, Cortex, Mississippi River Bridge, and a lot of other things. I'm especially proud of the increase in population of college-educated young people moving to our city for jobs, in the top ranking for LGBT issues in the city of St. Louis. We also have reduced dramatically lead poisoning in children, reduced chronic homelessness. We have regained our reputation as one of the top cities in America to create a job, to create a business. We've also have top ranking on financial services. We have great new neighborhoods like The Grove, like East Loop, North, Old North, as well as the East Loop and Grand Center and South Grand. These neighborhoods are joining our more established neighborhoods as beacons and magnets for our city, and we're very proud of those. These two gentlemen are going to try to make the case today that it's time to start all over. I'm going to argue the other end. We need to keep this city moving forward. The decision is up to you. I'd appreciate your support.
Thank you very much, Mayor Slay. I'll begin my questioning with you. What you've just said, notwithstanding, can't a case be made that after three terms, seeking an unprecedented fourth term, that it's time for a fresh set of eyes on the city's problems?
I think the points that I was just making are that having the experience, the time, and the great team that we put together, the partnerships that we've built, and we've been able to establish that we have really tackled some of the most difficult problems cities can face over these years. Sure, we have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of challenges. But we've made a lot of progress. And let me give you some examples. Over $6 billion in development. Crime has actually dropped by twice the national average in the past 6 years. Not enough. We still have a lot of work to do. We are implementing strategies to continue that downward trend in crime. In fact, violent crime is half what it was in 1995, the crime rate. And crime rate overall is at its lowest since 1972. We have more quality education opportunities for children. The St. Louis Public School District is improving, which I'm supporting and partnering with. But we're also creating new opportunities through charter schools. We've created a Children, Youth, and Families Task Force. We're partnering with people to deal with issues like teen pregnancy, youth violence, summer jobs for kids, after-school programs. We've created over thousands of new after-school programs for children. We've also reduced homelessness. We've got a national model. And lead poisoning in kids have dropped by 80% since I've been in office. We're focusing on crime, as I said. We've made a lot of progress there. I think we've demonstrated that. Let me tell you something. Here's what I think is important. Leadership matters. The mayor's office matters. Integrity and competence matters. And we can all talk about the challenges, but doing something about them, I think we've demonstrated that we can, and we still have a lot of work to do, and I'm ready to keep going.
Continuing in reverse order from the way this program started, Jimmy Matthews, I'll turn to you. The crime has been identified not only by the mayor just now, but throughout this campaign as issue number one.
Yeah.
What can you do as mayor to make this city safer?
Well, I'm quite sure the mayor did the best he can in terms of dealing with crime, but crime is a problem that deals with economics as well. If you don't hire young people, if you don't hire people that's committing crime or provide opportunities for people to commit crime, then crime is going to get worse. Biggest crime you can have in this town is taking money from people that are giving you money to run for race, run for political office. That's a crime itself. When you say you're going to run for office because if somebody don't give you money, you're not going to run for office, I think that's a crime. We have all kinds of crime. If you're talking about crime with the youths, that problem is solvable. But in my neighborhood, I get out and talk to young people crowding around and discuss their problems and their concerns. I talk to some veterans that are starting businesses and hiring veterans. There's some homeless people that got into business and they're hiring homeless people. People who get up out of from the bottom and start a business, they look back and help those that was in that condition. So even felons have business, they're hiring felons. So this kind of approach to employing people that got skills, those people out in the street, they have skill, they have work. They're our best resource. And when we overlook those people that's called homeless, I prefer to call those people who have problems and needs, and we all could have that. So what we're saying is that you can help people by educating these young people and offering opportunities. If I become your mayor, I want to start a skill center to train the homeless and those others that have desire to be trained. I want to give stipends, money, so they can go to school and not be worried about tuition and things of that sort. We have enough money to give that. If we're going to give this rich guy $300 million to develop a project in the city, we can take that money and give it to the homeless or help somebody start some schools or create what I call homeless village on Pruitt-Igoe site. We can do that and help some people that will build the project themselves with people who have the architectural skills, people who has engineering skills, and they can be part of the construction management process of getting their job done. People build their own neighborhood, has more invested in the neighborhood, plus they get the revenue that's spent on the project and jobs and stuff. I looked in the neighborhood, I go through the neighborhood, and I see everybody working on a job that doesn't live in the neighborhood, don't look like the people that live in the neighborhood. Why is that? I have a problem with that. If we build a project in our community, the people that live in that community ought to be the people that's building that project. And I'm quite sure we can get some skills in our community or utilize skills. I talked to a guy, a carpenter. He's been off work, African-American. Been off work for years, carpenter. We've been doing all this building down at Ball Park Village. I'm wondering how many lawyers are going to be involved in that project. Signing some paper saying it's going to be, I forgot what he called it. But it should have been a legislative process.
I want to give other candidates some time, Mr. Matthews, so thank you very much for those comments. Lewis Reed, there is an active proposal on the table for establishing gun courts in the city of St. Louis. Do you think this is a good idea? And I've talked to some criminal defense attorneys who are concerned that with courts like these, if they are established, you eliminate the presumption of innocence. Do you buy into that?
Well, first and foremost, I know that this is a proposal that's been pushed by my opponent. But I'm not sure that we can actually do that since gun cases are felony cases. We need to work with the courts, and the courts can establish it, but I'm not sure that we can. But some of the things I need to clear up from the previous thing was, my opponent also states that, he's done a tremendous job. He states and he rattles off all these statistics. It would be nice if Forbes would agree, because Forbes has consistently called us one of the worst run cities in America. So if we're going to pull statistics from Forbes magazine, let's make sure that we pull that stat also, because that's a very important one also. And the reason why that one is important is because when you look at where you want to start a business, you look at where you want to raise a family, you look at where you want to invest, you need to understand that you're investing in an area that's stable, that's growing, and an area that's not stagnant. And currently we're stagnant in almost every single factor except for the crime rate and some of these other major factors. When we look at the statistics and when we begin to say that we're driving the crime rate down, let's not omit the fact that crime rate has dropped consistently across the United States of America for the last 12 years also. So any crime rate drop that we take off, we need to make sure that we take into account that factor. And if we don't, we will still continue to look at the same case that we have today, where we started out 12 years ago, the fourth or fifth most crime-rated city, and now we're the number two. And then he took us to the number one crime-rated city in America and then began to cite statistics as he dropped us from number one to number two. We have a long way to go. These things are serious. 113 people were murdered in the streets of the city of St. Louis last year. 113 people were murdered the previous year, and we're not doing any better. And I'm tired. I'm really tired of us continuing to come to the table and playing with statistics. These things are real, and they're serious, and I'm hoping and praying one day that my opponent takes them as serious as they are.
I think Mayor Slay probably wants to respond to that. I'll ask him to do so as we invite Cheryl P. to come up to the microphone. She'll have a question following the mayor's comments. Mayor Slay, go ahead.
Yeah, first of all, I thank you for the opportunity to respond, because it certainly needs some response. You know, what's interesting is Mr. Reed, who's complaining about the airport and how bad it is a member of the Airport Commission.
And I fought for those changes.
And haven't heard anything about that. But the other thing, let me finish.
One at a time,
I'll let
please.
You talk. The other thing is, Mr. Reed has been a member of the Board of Estimate and Apportionment, as I said earlier, has equal say on city municipal expenditures, on contracts, and on real estate matters. He has the same say that I do on all those things. Throughout his career in politics, he has stood with me on virtually everything and have heard little from him on the issues that he now complains. And I'll say that much. The other thing is on the worst managed city government, you should look at the factors that they took into consideration, one of which was the high poverty rate in the city. And that is something that we all need to be concerned about. But let me tell you what they didn't consider. The fact that under the toughest economy we've seen in almost all of our lifetimes, we've been able to balance our budget with skyrocketing pension costs. We have also been able to provide a high level of city services. We've been able to work to reduce crime by twice the national average over the last 6 years. And we've been able, through all of this, with your support, we've been able to maintain the highest credit rating the city has seen in decades. So these are things we need to be proud of. We can't be fooled by rhetoric, and we can't be fooled by all this talk. We need to make sure we get down to what's real. We talk about the challenges, and we do something about them. And that's what I've been doing. Thank you.
I'd like to bring Cheryl into the conversation here. Go ahead with your question or comment,
please. Could I have something to say on that?
Hold on just a second, Mr. Matthews. We'll take this question and then come back to you and Mr. Reed.
Good morning. My name is Cheryl Prim. What I put on my card was, everyone's talking about black crime. How can we stop black crime if we have not stopped white-collar crime? That's corruption. Okay, I am disabled. They swept it on the table like on Medicare. I didn't hurt myself on Medicare. I hurt myself on the job. And that needs to be addressed because I'm not the only one. Thank you very much.
Would you like to direct that question to a specific candidate?
Well, would that be the candidate that I know that can help me with this? I want to know.
You're free to address whomever you would like to.
Yeah, I want to address the mayor that we have now, because for once, my granddaughter slept through the crack of the lead paint before he started that, and that should have... Because of her age, she's affected with that. And those are two things. But I stick with the one. The white-collar crime, that's where it starts. It starts at the top.
Let's go to the mayor. You said you'd like to direct it to him. Let's do so.
To Mayor Slay, yes, I would.
Okay, white collar crime is as bad as any other kind of crime. It corrupts our system. And I think basically, I don't know exactly what specific situations you're talking about, but we work closely with the federal authorities, with St. Louis Police Department and others, when there are incidents of white collar crime that are there. I can tell you on crime generally what we've done. We've raised the city's police department's budget by 44% since I've been in office, while our overall general operating budget's only gone up by 27%. My office budget, on the other hand, has gone down by 13%. Our corrections budget's gone up by 89%. So we have spent a lot of money. We've really made a priority, crime overall, in the city. We've made that a priority. We've also pushed the police department to work harder and smarter, and I can talk a lot about what we've done there, and we've got some results. And in the future, you know, we need to do more things to create summer jobs programs for kids, address youth violence through our youth violence task force, our regional task force that I helped create, through our Commission on Children, Youth, and Families. We also need to make sure that we do more for reentry programs for people coming out of prison. That's something that I advocated for, received funding 3 years in a row from the state on. But then when the economy went in the tank, the program went away. We're back in Jeff City this year trying to get some more money in the budget with the help of Senator Jamila Nasheed to help us get some funding for our, and Penny Hubbard, for our, you know, so that we have the money necessary to address those coming back into society so they can have a positive experience and get a job rather than getting back on the streets and committing crimes again. We need to be smarter with the police department. We've got a new chief. We also have local control of the police department. I think that's going to help make the department stronger and more effective, and I can keep going, and I know my time, but I'll stop with that.
Thanks very much. Plenty to chew on there. Jimmy Matthews, you had indicated you wanted to respond to an earlier comment. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I'm very concerned about the crime statistics. And I don't have to look at Forbes to find out what the statistics are, simply because in our neighborhood, where I live at in Walnut Park, we have a killing a week. And I've had several killings on my, as a matter of fact, in front of our church in the neighborhood. And on Riverview and Sherry, there have been two killings in the same spot. So one of my young students at Northwest, one of his friends was killed and dumped in a trash can. So we have plenty of statistics in the 27th Ward to let us know that we are not healthy as it relates to crime. And we need to not look at Forbes, just look around. And you walk the street at night and you'll find out. And when you're a victim of a crime, you know crime exists. I was walking to my church at 2 o'clock in the morning. I usually do that, and I'm not afraid. First time I ever got held up. I didn't get robbed because I didn't have any money. I just got stuck up.
Lewis Reed, do you agree with the proposal by the new chief of police to reduce the number of police districts in the city from 9 to 6?
I think we need a comprehensive study based on the current footprint of the city in terms of, you know, where our business districts are today, where, you know, the new residential areas and things of that nature. I would not just you know, say, okay, we need to reduce the number of districts. Who knows what would happen at the end once we really begin to align the districts with what the current footprint is in the city. But I have to answer a couple of the things that were brought up by my opponent a little bit earlier when he talked about the role that I play in city government. And I need to remind him that he is the chief executive officer. He's the CEO of the city and the head of the executive branch of city government. I'm the head of the legislative branch of city government and a lawmaker. And if he doesn't want to do his job, I will do it for him. But what he does, with the power he has the power to set policy. We establish laws jointly. He sets policies and carries them out. Every single city department that touches the people out here, they report directly to him. He has an opportunity to set their budgets. He sets their manpower. He sets their goals, their directions. He sets all of that stuff. Other mayors prior to him have been able to manage and been able to get these things done. But somehow he will not take responsibility for these things. Yeah. And consequently, we're sitting here, he cites a high poverty rate. If he knows that we have a high poverty rate, what are you doing to address it? If we take a look at the fact that the city of St. Louis, we have one of the highest unbanked populations in the United States of America. There is no plan to begin to address it. We continue to take money out of summer programs for kids. He'll list a whole litany of programs and on that he said he sets up for after school. What impact have they had on our education system? Obviously none, because we have not seen it and we have not heard of the impact of it. We cannot just set up programs for program's sake. We have to set up real substantive programs that can meet the needs of our community, and we need to do that now.
You mentioned education, and I hope I'm not interrupting you, but we have an audience member, Erin, who wants to broach that subject. So let's bring her in. Go ahead, Erin.
Can I respond to some of Reed's?
This question is from Mr. Reed. I was wondering if you could lay out the specifics of your plan to improve education. I know we keep hearing that's something you intend to do, but I've yet to hear any real specifics, so I'd like to hear those if you could.
All right. A number of things. Number one, we know now based on the data that is available all across the United States that is absolutely critical that we start kids as early as possible. So we have to have some pre-K programs in place in the city of St. Louis. And if we can get the state to work with us to make preschool mandatory, I think that would help out tremendously, and that helps the child all the way down the line from including how many days they miss work when they become an adult. And it also will impact the crime rate within the city of St. Louis also. We have to begin to align every nonprofit, social service agency, government agency that has anything to do with delivering services to a family. And wrap those services around education so that we have a solid, comprehensive wraparound services wrapped around education, and we can better connect the people to the need. And we're not doing that near enough today. And we know that has a profound impact on the education system. You know, also jobs, transportation, and all the other things that need to happen.
I'd like to ask the other candidates, too, for their education proposals. I'll go to Jimmy Matthews first, then the mayor. Go ahead. What specific ideas do you have for improving education?
I tried to mention them somewhat. The school parental involvement is very lacking. When I was taught at the St. Louis Public Schools, it seemed like parents was not really encouraged to participate. Parents know better to educate their children and discipline their children. Biggest problem I think we have in the school system is discipline. I don't think there's a real discipline strategy for our students. So the principal can't do it, the classroom teacher can't do it, and hopefully the parent can do it along with the principal and with the teacher. So you have to have the parent involvement, and I think they're not involved to a degree where if their voice is heard or they have a place to talk to someone that listens that's in the school system, such as the persons over the school system. If the parents had authority to see that a teacher is fired or administrator is moved or the administrator that runs the whole system, but the parent don't have that kind of authority. These gentlemen here, they set up took over the school board, not necessarily directly, but the governor, he appoints the one of the commissioners, the mayor does, and so does he. And if the school system is rotten, then they had something to do with it as well as some other folks. So we need to involve the parents with authority to see that people that are educating their children are disciplined to the point where the parents, have the authority and control of assists. But since we took over from the state with the encouragement of some politician in this room, allowed the system to be dismantled in a way where charter schools are being more charter schools, four is already proposed, tax increases coming up in April, that Mr. Reed and the mayor for the downtown, that's taking money away from the school. We could have passed that to help the school. When we took the gambling casino money and it disappeared, it didn't help the school. So the revenues are being ciphered off through charter schools, through other schemes and game plan. And those things doesn't help the school.
I think we have your points, Mayor Slay.
When we talk about education, we have to make every decision as if a child's life depends upon it, because it does. And every decision we make can't be about the adult issues. It has to be about what's best for the kids. And let me tell you what's best for the kids. The best for the kids is more quality education opportunities at every level. That includes early childhood, that includes K through 8, high school, and postgraduate. And it also includes after-school programs, all of which I've addressed very aggressively in my administration. Years ago, we received a $1 million early childhood grant. We partnered with a number of agencies to address that through my Commission on Children, Youth, and Families. We're working hard. We just received, the city received, not the city government itself, but some of the partners that we work with, received a $4.2 million grant for early childhood programs that would not only help support the programs that are in place and expand them, but also to work on more professional development of those that are operating them. That is for the two highest crime zip codes in the city of North St. Louis, the two zip codes that have the highest level of poverty, the highest number of kids, and the lowest performing educationally. That's the kind of stuff we have to do, and those are the things I've been doing since I've been in office. We also have, you know, we partner with organizations like Grace Hill, there's a Flant Center now over in Murphy Park, which is an early childhood. But on the after-school program, we started that program. We've partnered with Arches and St. Louis for Kids to put in private and public money to create over 3,000 new quality education after-school seats for kids in the city of St. Louis, because after-school is important as well, and we're getting results. A summer jobs program. As chairman of the Jobs, Education, and Workforce Committee at the Conference of Mayors, I represented thousands of cities all across America to advocate for after-school programs for children in our cities. We were successful in getting some of that money in the ERA, the stimulus funding, but that money's dried up. So we've started now our own local effort, which is a regional youth violence prevention task force that I've joined with St. Louis County Executive and the mayor of East St. Louis and a bunch of other partners so that we can address youth violence. But having good quality education options. Not only am I supporting the St. Louis Public School District in every way we can in terms of supporting them on early childhood, after school programs, we're partnering with them on recreation programs, and you know anything else they need in terms of support for things that they're moving forward with. But we know that while they have excellent schools in the St. Louis Public School District, there are not enough options for parents, and they keep choosing other options, the ones that can. You know, children who have the least amount of options and the least opportunities are the ones that need quality education the most. And that's why I'm also working with others to support quality free public charter schools in the city of St. Louis. I support it for the same reason our President Barack Obama and the national and his organization and his administration supports it, because it's all about quality. This isn't about, you know, picking sides and, oh, we got to support this, or we're taking money from the St. Louis Public School District and kids. Let me tell you something. This isn't the St. Louis Public Schools' money, and they aren't their kids. It's our money. It's our taxpayers. They're our children, and we need to make sure that money's used in the very best way for the most quality that we can get for our kids and our families. Our kids deserve it. Their lives depend upon it, and I'm going to go to bat for them every time so that we can get more quality options for them at every level.
You've used the word quality many times. The quality of St. Louis water is highly regarded, needless to say. We've had more questions from this audience and their written questions concerning the future of the water department and the proposed contract that's being talked about. What is the future of the water department, and do we need to outsource it?
Well, first of all, we're not outsourcing it. There's a lot of misinformation. We are not selling our water department. We're not lending it to anyone. We're not leasing it to anyone. We are operating the water department, and we intend to continue to operate the water department. In fact, our charter precludes us under law from outsourcing outsourcing that department by selling it to somebody else. We cannot do that, and we're not going to do it. What we do have is very quality water. We have a very old infrastructure. This is an old city. A representative from the water department came to see me within the last few years and said, Mayor, we have to start, you know, charging more money. We got to increase our rates several times over the next several years if we're going to do all the repairs we need to do and keep a high quality water for the people. And I said, hold on a second. You know, let's take a step back here. We're not just going to keep charging money and throwing it at a system without knowing how best to handle it. So what we did was we put out a request for proposal. We asked a number of organizations that do work all over the country to come up with proposals on as a consulting contract to give ideas for us on how we can do a better job and maybe financing the improvements, making sure that we get the best prices on the chemicals and things that we buy, making sure we're running in the most efficient way. And some of the things we put in this request for proposal is nobody's going to lose their job as a result of it. My objectives are these. Number one, to have the best quality water for the people that we serve, and two, to make sure we do our job to make sure that they are getting the best for the money that they're paying, because this is not cheap. But I will assure you this, there is nobody coming in here and going to be making the decisions on behalf of the people of St. Louis. Whatever recommendations they make, we run the water department. We will make the decisions on which one of the recommendations that we make or we don't make. I want to make that very clear.
Mr. Reed, you support the mayor on this?
No.
No. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, surprise. my opponent a little bit earlier said that we had been in agreement for years on a number of things. He actually took a lot of liberty with that by saying, I had been with him on everything. And the facts are dramatically different than that. Factually, my opponent would have to come over to my side on those things that were important to my community. Across the last few years, including this issue of the water department, he has begun to do those a number of things that have been very detrimental to our community, including the first proposal that we received on this water department issue. No matter what comes out of his mouth today, was a proposal for outsourcing that he was supportive of that landed on my desk. And I sent the developers packing with that proposal and said, I'm not interested in it. And so now the new proposal is for the city of St. Louis to pay that same company $250,000 to do a study, which we already have. So I'm not really following the logic in all of that. Also, a little bit earlier, my opponent talked about his after-school programs and how much money he had put in these after-school programs, but he failed to mention that when he brings up organizations like Arches and some of these other organizations, they're receiving grant money from a grant that was put together based on an ordinance that I passed. And I passed that ordinance in opposition of him, his entire office, and his supporters. But what that grant does is that it puts in place $1 million annually to go for programs and services for teens. And the reason we need that is because on our streets, when we hear about these shootings and things, these are not being done by 45, 50-year-old men. These are young folks committing these crimes. So we have to have programs and services in place so that we can begin to address these things in a real substantive and direct manner.
All right. I'm sure the mayor would like to respond. I'd like to move along. You've both had the opportunity to make your points. A couple of other issues that I would – Jimmy Matthews, go ahead. A couple of other issues I want to get to. So if you can keep your answers relatively concise, I'd appreciate it.
I will, but I certainly like to interject on that. Well, our gentlemen here, the mayor and the president, as I sat on the board of aldermen, I know that the mayor sent legislation over. The president don't have to do it, produce legislation. But some other alderman can bring the mayor's legislation to the table. I understand the mayor has to sign a legislative bill that is passed by the board of aldermen in order to do some things. And when Mr. Reed talked about he passed the legislation, you need 28 aldermen, you need 51%. If the mayor rejected the legislation, you have to get an override of that, more votes. And just recently, they passed a legislation that 24 aldermen voted for, that is to raise the sales tax. The mayor sent it over, and Mr. Reed voted for it, and several others. The president of the Board of Aldermen can have the audience of the public by speaking out forcefully or getting your votes to defeat the mayor's legislation. In many cases, he doesn't do that. So the mayor and the president, if anything passed or done by the mayor or E&A, they have to all be in agreement. With Darlene Green sitting on the board of E&A and the mayor sitting on the board of E&A, and so did Reed. I attended one of the meetings, and Reed's assistant was doing all the talking, and the president of the Board of Aldermen was not talking. The mayor passed the thing, so he had that star in your eye. You remember that? So we need to understand how the political process worked. Vince Chamberlain knows how it worked. And so we need to make sure that we're not just being snowed on.
Okay, I'm going to take another question from the audience in a moment. It will bring us back to education. This one issue, I'd like to just get in here and get comments from each of you. I'll start with Mr. Reed to keep this as fair as we can. Mr. Reed, how can we or should we, what can we and what should we do to keep the Rams in St. Louis? I'm sorry I interrupted your breakfast.
Sorry. As everyone can probably hear, I have a horrible throat problem this morning, so I was trying to get a drink of water when you saw me. Well, we need to make sure that we stay at the table with the Rams, continue to keep dialogue open, and try to come up with a plan that certainly, number one, protects the taxpayers. Number two, try to keep a professional team in St. Louis. And keep that part of the economy moving. Mr. Matthews a few minutes ago talked about this tax issue, and on the tax issue, we're not voting to pass a tax. We're voting to give the people of the city of St. Louis an opportunity to vote on it. So it's just that's all that was. The Rams, they play an important role in our city. People who follow football all across the United States know, they may never come to St. Louis had it not be for the Rams. So I think that's an important component. But the question is, how much are we willing to pay for it? And I think the current proposals that are on the table are too steep for us, and I don't think we can afford to do it.
I think $750 million is the figure we keep seeing. Mayor Slay, your thoughts on this. What can and should we do to keep the team here?
Well, first, I think everybody, well, most people would agree that it's good to have a professional football team in town. The Rams, there's a lot of rabid fans here. It does add to the prestige of a city. I want to do what we can that makes sense to keep the Rams in St. Louis, but not at any cost. I think that's very, very clear. And thus far, and this, I don't know that the general public gets this information, gets through them in the press, but there really hasn't been any discussions or any negotiations with the Rams to this point. The only thing that's happened is there's been exchange of proposals. And all we know is they have a $700 million-plus proposal for the current dome, which, of course, if they're expecting the taxpayers to pay at all, it's not going to happen. So what we need to do is we need to have discussions and negotiations with them in a way that, will hopefully keep them in St. Louis, but in a way that will consider, of course, the taxpayers, because if there's going to be any new taxes that doesn't involve the game day experience, extra taxes on food, even them, I would suspect it's going to need the approval of the people of St. Louis before it happens. We're going to provide our leadership with the Convention and Visitors Commission, the state and the county, because we're all working on this together on behalf of the taxpayers, and the Rams are going to do what they're going to do. But in the end, we're going to try to find a common ground. But again, it can't be at any cost. It's got to make sense for the taxpayers, number one.
Jimmy Matthews, you want to make a brief comment on that? We'll go back to
brief,
the audience.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
The Rams can stay if they want to, but we can get another team here. If the Rams want to go, we buy our team like another state or another city bought their team. So $700 million, I think you can buy a team or form a team, and then we have two football teams here. You can have one in Fenton and have one in St. Louis. And right. I think that's what they're proposing. They're going to go to Fenton or somewhere. Pardon me?
I was going to say former Mayor Schemel is in the audience today. You might want to talk to him about
it. Bosley was with when the Rams first came here. Bosley was here. Bosley was negotiating with some people in Chicago. So I'm saying that Bosley, he took one side or the other. We had an African-American in a group that was going to take the body Rams, and Bosley went otherwise.
All right. Well, let's go back to the audience. And Allison, go ahead. Thank you for waiting.
Sorry. My name actually is Susan. And I have a question about development policy. I realize development is very important to the city because somewhere between 20 to 25% of the real estate in the city is vacant. And in order to get development to occur in the city, it's been policy to offer a lot of tax abatements and TIFs to developers to make development attractive. Now, this has interfered with the revenue stream to our public schools, not only the public school district, but also Mayor Slay's beloved charter schools are being robbed of revenue. I believe to the amount of about $28 million a year. That could go a long way toward improving quality of education in our tax-supported schools in the city. What I would like to know is, in the future, whether the Slay administration will continue its current policy of offering the full amount of the property taxes that would go to the St. Louis Public Schools and his beloved charter schools to developers, or whether that amount would be cut down to only 50%, and also whether in a Matthews administration or a Reid administration, the full amount or only a 50% amount would be offered to developers so that the school district could continue to receive some revenue from property that is going to be developed.
Susan, we have the point. Let's leave some time for a response. We'll start with the mayor.
Yes, I appreciate the question, and I will tell you about these tax incentives. You have to remember, we have some neighborhoods in our city that have seen a lot of disinvestment, a lot of outward migration of jobs and people. There's a lot of environmental contamination. There's a lot of older buildings that have been built for another purpose and another time for different uses and needs that have been vacated. And in order to attract investment in our city, we and cities all across America and across the region, by the way, provide tax incentives to spur investment and create jobs. You have a vacant building, you provide tax abatement, you don't reduce the taxes, you just freeze the taxes for 10 years, and then after 10 years, they have to pay the full taxes. But in that meantime, you'll bring jobs in, you bring people in that are paying taxes, they're paying income taxes, they're buying things in your city, they're creating economic activity, tax increment financing. I mean, what we've seen is neighborhoods all over the city, and I've talked about them, that you see a lot of new older buildings being built and invested in because of tax credits, low-income tax credits, historic preservation tax credits. And as a result, we've been able to revitalize a lot of neighborhoods, bring people into our city who are looking for unique spaces, beautiful neighborhoods, close proximity to jobs and culture and entertainment attractions. But in order to attract that investment, these incentives need to be in place, but they have to be done in a very, very professional and a discriminatory way. You got to, in other words, a very deliberative way. You need to do it in a way, you got to be very discriminating in terms of how and where this money goes to make sure that it goes for the right reasons. Because if you assume that if we had none of this, I don't think you can assume, I know you can't, that if we had no tax incentives, that all this development would have happened and all these taxes would go to those taxing entities. The other thing about TIFs is tax increment financing is a program like we're going to do at Ballpark Village where a portion of the new tax revenues, these are new tax revenues, goes to the taxing jurisdiction, including the schools. And the other portion goes to paying off the bonds to finance the things. So these are tax revenues that would not have existed if it were not for this development. So I think you got to look at it in whole. Other cities do it. We are competing with other cities. In order to compete and bring investment, we need to do these, but we have to do it very, very, you know, we have to do it carefully, and we have to do it very professionally.
Mr. Matthews, would like to comment.
Thank you. I remember I was campaigning over in Soulard, and I don't know if they had TIF, I don't know if they had tax abatement, but a lot of those houses, people put some sweat equity in them and repaired them. I have been against the idea of giving tax abatements, not 10 years, but 30 years when I was on the Board of Aldermen. And then the developer ends up selling the project and making a profit and a killing and leaving town. TIF, you know, all that kind of business. I think we have the best located spot on the planet, gateway to the west. And when the early history, people picked up all their supplies and went west. We have the real estate that those persons want. And when you give it away through LRA and other agencies that are land banking property just to give away to a developer, I could not get a piece of property unless the alderman approves it. So we'll have, the citizen are being held in hostage, can't get the property next door to them, it's vacant. And the vacant property will cause property to go down in value. And most of that vacant property is owned by the city, LRA, and they're getting paid and they're giving away the property. If they sell the property for the price it's worth, then they would be able to take care of their own budget to run that office. If I'm mayor, I'm going to make sure that LRA changes whereby you, the people, can buy a piece of property next door to you. And if you want to rehab a property on your block, you can buy it and rehab it. And if you want to give some TIF funds away, give it to the citizen that want to build a house on his block or fix a house on his block or start a garden on a vacant lot that's in the neighborhood. So we need vision. And these two gentlemen here citing what they're doing somewhere else, if we're going to be innovative, we got to be creative. And you can't just copy people's stuff and bring it here and think it's going to work. Every community is different, and every community has different people. And if you don't involve the people in what you're doing and rebuilding the city, then the people sit on the outside watching somebody come in and make the money and get out of town. Most of our neighborhoods in the African-American community, all the stores and so forth in our neighborhood is owned by other people. Their families working those business, and we're not working in those business. We're not owning those business. So therefore, the revenue that we pay through those stores and buy their products, they take it somewhere else and build mansions. And we could do that in the city.
Let's get some comment from Mr. Reed, if you don't mind, Mr. Matthews, on the TIF issue. Go ahead.
All right. Thanks, Don. First off, on the TIF issue, I think we should hold the school districts harmless on every TIF as much as we possibly can. I think that needs to be one of our first priorities when we're looking at TIFs. And the biggest challenge I see with TIFs today is are we really truly meeting the but-for test? Because before we can even pass a TIF, or before we even supposed to even entertain a TIF, we're supposed to pass a but-for test. But for the TIF, is this project even possible? Because oftentimes, the city of St. Louis will be the first money in the deal. And if we're the first money in the deal, it lowers the bar for everybody else downstream. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, like I stated earlier, we need to make sure that we hold these school districts harmless. But more importantly, as it relates to, how the charter schools, how we're approaching the issue of charter schools within our city, we're banking everything on charter schools. And if we continue to bank everything on charter schools, we will continue to lose population, and this is why. We sit here within this 64, 65 square miles. Nearly every point in the city, we can be in a new school district within 15 minutes. We're not Chicago, L.A., New York, where it's a 45-minute trip each way. So what that tells us is this. Before someone will begin to explore other educational options, they have to have a comfort level that the base education system is a stable and solvent system. Otherwise, they'll move to another school district, and in that other school district, then they will begin to explore those other educational options. And I think on this point, this is where, I've been pushing my opponent for years to try to get back to reality on this issue, that charter schools, in most people's minds, are still just educational options. I know that he's coining it and saying that he's opened up 20 new public schools, and what he's citing are charter schools. And but if people aren't classifying these two school systems in the same level, and they're not today, we're going to lose population. We're going to lose population again in 10 years.
I want to get a quick one-word comment from you and from Mr. Matthews. Are you two gentlemen going to release your taxes as the mayor is required to do?
Very
quickly.
I file a joint return, and my wife, she's an attorney in her private practice and things of that nature. The mayor is in, Francis Slay is in a much different situation. And in his situation, his wife is a stay-at-home mother. On their joint return, there isn't a lot of risk there.
I filed all of the
paperwork that we need to file for office, personal financial disclosure statements, and all that, everything else. I know this is an issue that's being pushed by my opponent. What I would like my opponent to do today, and will he commit to do this for me today, because this is more important than a tax return, will you commit to releasing the checkbook from the $151,000 that you've transferred from campaign funds to a private corporation, and then we found that that private corporation was defunct a couple weeks ago? Will you release that checkbook to show us where that $151,000 have went? Because it's our understanding that there's been off-the-book expenditures being made out of that $151,000, that $151,000 have been used to campaign with and everything else. That's a very important issue.
Going to have to get the mayor to respond then to you, Jimmy Matthews.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mayor.
Yeah, absolutely.
But very quickly, we have a minute and a half left. And I want to leave a few seconds at least for Mr. Matthews.
I'm sorry. Yeah, first and foremost, the president was talking about, he's been talking to me about charter schools all these years. He never has. One time talked to me. His kids have gone to charter schools. Here's the other thing. Let me finish. Secondly, as far as the finances, I know nothing about what you're talking about. I've never heard anything about that.
You don't know about the $151,000 that was transferred.
And as far as TIFs, you've supported every single one, the tax abatements. I don't know one time you've ever complained about it.
So you're standing here complaining about charter schools, you're complaining about TIFs.
And you're complaining about tax.
Will you go on record today and say that you do not know anything about the $151,000?
Yes, I will go on record today. I know nothing about it. I don't know what you're talking about.
Your campaign transfer.
We're going to leave that right there because Mr. Matthews deserves a moment.
Thank you.
But it has to be quick, Mr. Matthews.
These guys argue all the time. We won't get any time of discussion if they keep arguing.
You've got 30 seconds.
And I'm in the middle. I don't like that. I wish y'all stopped that. I would ask to both of these candidates to tell me who they're getting money from to run for this race. Excuse me, I don't like that.
You've got to wrap this up in 10 seconds.
And he's taking my time by interrupting. Thank you.
5 seconds.
Yes. Disclose where you're getting your money from, Mr. Paul McKee and few other rich folks.
I'll leave it there, Mr. Matthews. Time is up. We understand your point. You gentlemen can continue this conversation. Mayor Slay, Jimmy Matthews, Lewis Reed, thank you so much for being with us today. This meeting was produced by Alex Hoyer, Mary Edwards, and engineered by Greg Montanew. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Special thanks to Phil Donato, Terrence Dupuy, Rich Herberts, Kelsey Proud, Bill Rack, Aaron Doerr, Spencer Reed, Jennifer Porter, Kristen Radican, Mike Schran, Drew Becker, Sean Sandifer, and the Nine Network, Kent Samuel, for their assistance in today's broadcast. We thank you all in the audience for being with us. This program is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks for being with us. I'm Don Marsh.